All right, so tonight I'd like to talk about thought. And we've covered a lot of it actually with the questions and answers. I appreciate the engagement around that. A lot of nice nuances that came out around that. And just kind of stepping back and looking at how the course has started so far as we focused on body sensation, breath, sound, something that is very obviously present moment, and learning how to release our story, our thinking around it, to learn the distinction between being lost in thought and connecting to what's here right now. So you can see that distinction. It's not such a, it's easily said, but it's actually a very profound thing to notice, is that my thoughts about something is different than the actual experience of that thing. You know, we get feedback all the time from life around this. You know, we think one thing and then it turns out to be something different. We hear a sound, it turns out to be something different. We take that much more personally, how we take ourselves to be another human being, how we project our ideas on them. And so learning how to connect to the present moment is not only this gateway into that moment, in a way, the other piece that allows it to unfold, but also allows us to free the world really from our thinking. Because it's so easy to be lost in thought. We spend so much of our time into thinking, into our planning, our worry, our remembering. James Joyce, I think I said this earlier, had a character in Dubliners called Mr. Duffy. And there's this little line, they said, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. You know, and that's describes us. You know, we're kind of like going, our body's doing one thing, our mind's someplace else. And we so often, you know, don't realize that there's two different things. And so meditation's about living within this body, living within this moment. Now, thought, as you've noticed, can be like a fast-moving stream. You know, if we're out going by the stream and we try to jump into it and swim a little bit, we might be swept down miles before we even realized it. You know, we can have a thought of a vacation and suddenly we're planning the next vacation. And the bell rings and realize 20 minutes have gone by. You know, this is so easy to do. It's such a part of being human. You know, it's that how powerful thought has, how much momentum it has. So learning to distinguish between thinking and direct sense data is so essential. And so tonight we start to give the first way of working with that. Not even really the first way, just like we've covered a lot of ground in that. But to observe how thought arises, to see it just as another experience moving through the landscape of our awareness, sometimes learning to focus in on a thought to understand it more deeply, particularly around the thought that leads to more suffering and one that leads to more freedom. And it all centers around this capacity to observe thought, to actually know that I am thinking, or even more fundamentally, to know that thought is present. Okay, this is different than when we're lost in thought, we're not aware of it because we're kind of in the middle of it. It's like if we went and watched a, remember when we used to have like big gatherings and weddings and stuff before COVID? And it, you know, sometimes you know, you're in the middle of like, let's say folk life and you're doing one of those, you know, folk dances or square dancing and they're, you know, everyone's moving everywhere and you're, I always kind of turned the wrong way and caused a lot of havoc. But if I stepped back and got at the balcony and looked at it, I could see the whole movement without being lost in it. Usually with thought, we're in the middle of it, kind of either dancing really well or getting, you know, or getting a, making a big mess. But that's that stepping back, that sense of almost creating a little distance initially to observe thought so we're not lost in it. So we have a sense of perspective. This starts to open a very different relationship to thought, one that we start not believing every thought that arises, but able to observe it and understand from it, understand what it has to teach us. Because so often thought, we take it as being a statement of reality, a statement of how things actually are. And that's where a lot of suffering comes. When I say, oh, you're this kind of a person, and I don't look beyond that. I am that kind of a person, and how it constrains me. Puts that prism around me. So learning to see thought just as another phenomenon is so helpful. And part of meditation is really learning to see when experience happens, how we create this whole story around it. Here's a story from Sharon Salzberg related to something her Joseph Goldstein said to her. Now I'm throwing out these names like you know who they are. So Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg were one of some of the first Westerners who went to Asia and learned these techniques and were authorized to come back and teach some 50 years ago. And they founded one of the big residential meditation centers called Insight Meditation Society over in Massachusetts in Barrie. So they're very famous, many books they've written. So Sharon's saying the story. I was teaching with my colleague, Joseph Goldstein, when a student came to see him in great distress. The man said he just had a terrible experience. He was meditating, felt tension in his jaw, and suddenly realized what an uptight person he is, how he can't get close to anyone, and that he's going to be alone for the rest of his life. Joseph said, "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" The man continued with his projections. He said that he was pretty sure he'd always be tense. He would never change. He felt hopeless. "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" Joseph said. I watched the man continue barreling down this path of misery for some time, all because of a sore jaw. Until finally, Joseph said, "You're having a painful experience. Why are you adding a horrible self-image to it?" And this is what thought does to us if we're not conscious of it, that we take the story that it's telling us as true, as fact, and learning to question that, to actually see, oh, that's just a thought, and to actually even more connect to that present moment experience that may be generating the thought. See, someone asked, I think it was Patricia, around the different kind of categories of thoughts. And one thought, I don't know if someone named, is the thought that's related to experience. Like you hear a bell, you know, a thought may arise from that. If you're a meditator, you may actually find silence coming from that. But so often we hear something, we see something, and that triggers a whole layer of thinking. Just like this man with his jaw pain created this whole story that he started to live instead of the actual experience of the jaw pain. This is why we emphasize feeling the body, opening to those sensations. It's such it's not just a beginner instruction. It's the fundamental instructions. Because thought has a tremendous power. It can really define who we are, what we are, how we live by it. You know, we're really driven by it. So we learn to relate to thought just as another experience. There's a bumper sticker that said, "Don't believe everything that you think." Okay. So if you just took that away from the class that, okay, don't believe everything that you think. And I think as meditators, you get to observe your thought in a way that most people don't. You just realize how sometimes random it is to use the famous seagulls in Australia. We'll make that the title of the talk here. You know, the random thoughts. You know, the thoughts which are obsessive, the thoughts which are worried, the thoughts which are beautiful. You just see how they are all over the place. And you start to learn, okay, I don't have to believe everything that my mind thinks. And actually in Buddhist psychology, Buddhist teaching, they consider there's six senses. You know, the normal five that we're familiar with. But also thought, the cognitive is considered as the sixth sense. Not in a supernatural way, not in a sixth sense how we normally think of it, but just as another sense gate. Just how your nose smells, your eyes see, your ear hears, the mind thinks. If you start to relate to thought in that way, it starts to free up this kind of habitual contraction and enmeshment around thinking. That sense of the thought, and we don't see it as something, just as another experience, we tend to place so much emphasis on it. We tend to place it as a forefront of our experience. The Buddha talked about creating the world from this body, how this 5-foot, 6-foot body creates the whole world. And I think what he meant by that is you take these senses and we project our meaning upon them. We project our ideas upon them. That's creating a world. That's creating a whole reality around our sense data, our sense state gates, or sense data. And the trouble is, of course, that world is sometimes inaccurate. Here's an example around that. It's not so much an inaccuracy, but just how it's not shared by everybody. How your idea of the world is not the same as everyone else's. This is what some of the fundamental issues we are struggling with as a culture around, you know, things like racism, things around prejudice, around, you know, white dominance, supremacy, all those kind of deep underlying assumptions of how things should be, you know, particularly white male, and learning to see, okay, that's just a thought. That's just an expression of how things, well, from one limited perspective. Now, thought is a fundamental way that happens. So here's an example of a bridge that was built in France, you know, not too long ago, but it was maybe the biggest bridge or one of the biggest bridges in the world at that time. And what's interesting is how the newspapers, it was right in the border between France and Germany, and how the German newspapers perceived it and spoke of it versus the French newspapers. The French looked at that bridge and said, you know, it's massive, it's gigantic, it's powerful. While the German newspapers described it as being elegant and graceful and beautiful. Okay, same concrete, same steel. The difference is that in German language, bridge has a feminine, you know, that's the gender. While in France, bridge is masculine. And just that simple way of attributing gender to an object created a whole different way of perceiving it. Okay, so how often are we doing that? I mean, it's automatic. It's so close. That's part of it. What becomes really interesting is trying to unpack how we project our reality on the world. The good news is we start to free up how the world actually is, and we can connect with it and actually celebrate the diversity of how people perceive the world. And it's not just the external world, it's the internal world. I mean, so much of our emotional suffering, our psychological suffering is around that contraction of who we take ourselves to be. A thought that's been believed in, that's been hardened around. So meditation starts to teach us the skill to see through that, to actually connect directly with how things are. So how do we work with thought? You know, first we learn how to release thought so we aren't swept away. Because, you know, if we just say, okay, sit down and just let your mind do what it will, a lot of us will find ourselves just, you know, happily daydreaming and being lost in thought, or maybe caught in a worry and anxiety that we can't let go of. It just seems so engrossing. So for many of us, especially early on, we have to learn to practice intentionally letting go of thought. Letting go of thought and then connecting with something that's right here in this moment. Feeling this body sitting, feeling this breath, feeling a sensation, hearing a sound. All this helps to orient us to what's here right now. And that's why we work with the body to find that reference point. Now, the stronger the pull the thought has, the more we have to find that anchor, find that connection to the body. Then eventually we can start to notice how thoughts arise, and we can also still be connected to the body. That was, I think, an important distinction or a kind of a cross check. Is when thoughts are rising, can I also feel my body equally? Can I feel my breath equally? Can I feel a sensation equally? This is actually a great practice for how to bring meditation into your life. And you know, when you're talking to someone, you know, like as I'm talking now, can I feel my body as equally as I'm feeling the words? As I'm listening, can I feel my body? Reserving some of our awareness into our body while we're communicating starts to open this whole realm of understanding and knowledge that's so often ignored. Now, when our attention is more steady, you know, either through practice, through meditation, or maybe just the interest to look more clearly. Like, this is really vital for me to pay attention. And I can start to unpack thought and see how it kind of leads from one to another. And maybe ask, okay, what's being taken as true here? What am I assuming is true in this moment? I think I used this example last week, the coil of rope. Did I talk about that? Yes, no, I know Joe remembers it, but so the coil rope, and you see the coil of the rope in the distance, and you think it's a snake. Yeah. Okay, so that's an example how we create this whole story around one thought, you know, one misperception. And so learning to step back and say, oh, I'm making this whole story, connecting with that initial perception is so helpful. So in this way, thought becomes a tool. It becomes something we can use in a powerful way, a creative way, to solve problems, to understand ourselves in the world, but also start to see it as just one piece of this whole experience. We start to find there's a natural stillness that comes. I think so often we come to meditation with this expectation that our mind should be quiet, that it shouldn't be any thoughts. And we become frustrated because we sit down and see how full of our minds are of thought. And so this stage in the class, this is a turning, an important piece, because we start to realize that thought doesn't matter if thoughts are arising or not arising. It's how we're relating to it. Like if we all sat, you know, we're standing out in a cool, smooth lake and we weren't moving, you know, that's like the stillness of our minds. And if there's a splash, a ripple, that's like a thought going through it. We can just observe that ripple and not make any big deal of it. But if we try to make that ripple stop by splashing and stopping the ripple, we just create more and more ripples. So that's kind of the usual way we react to thought. We try to make more of it, or we try to stop it. And the paradox is that the more we relax, okay, thoughts are rising, it's no big deal, we start to actually quiet down, especially as we start to notice the thoughts that lead to more stillness, the release of our suffering, and the thoughts that lead to more noise. We start to naturally want to have less noise. We want to have more peace, more ease in our lives. And it becomes much more natural, just our minds naturally quiet down, not through will, not through power, not through effort, but just simply wisdom and compassion. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a few moments. Let those words settle.